Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I've got one from Tony Sheng today, and it is on TonySheng.com, so it's just right on his page. I have not read one by Tony Sheng before. Looks like he works on the Decentraland project and is a builder and investor in a lot of different technologies. But he has an article today. I think it was released just a few days ago. I don't think it even has a date on it. But it is another fun perspective on kind of the differences and conflicting viewpoints in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space. And it is titled Crypto Incrementalism versus Crypto Anarchy. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Crypto Incrementalism versus Crypto Anarchy. A close friend of mine invests in crypto. He focuses on projects that either help with regulatory compliance or fiat inflows, for example, institutional custody. He sees value in blockchain and the surrounding ecosystem not as an unstoppable force that tears down borders, undermines governments, and shepherds in an era of crypto anarchy, but is nothing more than a new data structure with potentially disruptive use cases. Let's call this crypto incrementalism. My other friends want unstoppable, unseizable money that cripples legacy financial institutions, a transparent, uncensorable information infrastructure that precludes any abuses from states or corporations, true privacy and anonymity, such that participants are completely unidentifiable by those that would seek to harm them, and a society built on technologies unable to comply with authoritarian requests. Let's call this crypto anarchy. Crypto incrementalists and the crypto anarchists share strong convictions in the power of decentralization. Both can get excited about Satoshi's vision to improve on a financial system that relies, quote, almost exclusively on financial institutions serving as trusted third parties to process electronic payments, end quote. Nobody mourns the removal of the middleman. It's a powerful starting point for crypto incrementalists and crypto anarchists alike. However, these groups diverge quickly as we move from the abstract to the material. How should we handle a government's request to identify an individual using a cryptocurrency? How do we return assets stolen in a hack? How do we enforce legality for tokenized physical assets, for example, real estate, or tokenized securities? Crypto incrementalism. Crypto incrementalists think it's okay, even preferable, to design crypto systems able to comply with requests from governments and corporations. Assets stolen? Use a backdoor to reverse the transactions. Need to enforce legality of tokenized securities? Design around the existing legal infrastructure so the legal system is the, quote, source of truth. Here the benefit of crypto is to reduce inefficiencies in existing systems by applying a new technology. Working with governments and corporations is the easiest way to drive that adoption. Recent actions by the powers that govern EOS provide an instructive example. On June 22nd, the, quote, EOS Core Arbitration Forum, ECAF, asked the 21 EOS block producers, the 21 entities that decide what, quote, truth is on the chain, to freeze 7 accounts, providing no explanation. The ECAF stated, quote, the logic and reasoning for this order will be posted at a later date, end quote. Alarmingly, all 21 block producers complied. Such a process gives EOS the flexibility to deal with malicious actors, but comes at the cost of potential abuses. It's not hard to imagine a scenario where hackers sent a similar decree to the block producers, or for the ECAF to ask the block producers to freeze accounts on behalf of a government. This is a trade-off. Acceptance of these risks offers a way to incorporate blockchain into some very large industries, such as enterprise blockchains, security tokens, tokenization of physical assets, and more. For these use cases, a centralized entity has authoritarian control of the protocol by design. It's the only way to comply with existing financial and legal systems. Debates around these use cases tend to reduce to this single design choice that is exciting to crypto incrementalists and repulsive to crypto anarchists. Crypto anarchy. Crypto anarchists want information infrastructures that are, by design, unable to comply with authoritarian requests. Assets stolen? Nobody has the power to reverse the transactions. Best we can do is fork the protocol. Need to enforce legality of tokenized securities? Hard as fuck and probably not worth working on. Want to identify an individual participant in the network? Sorry, that data does not exist. Any designs that make a protocol vulnerable to authoritarian control render said protocol useless. For crypto anarchists, the success is binary. Sufficient protections against centralized powers or insufficient. Anything in the middle is insufficient. Why require complete decentralization and privacy? The corner cases are unacceptable. Members of a persecuted minority could get their funds frozen, speech censored, identity deleted by an evil government. Even if the government couldn't directly freeze the funds, for example, we're all using a Bitcoin, without sufficient privacy, they could identify the addresses belonging to the members of that persecuted minority and take actions on them physically or through the ecosystem surrounding Bitcoin, for example, retailers. Use of popular decentralized networks are not yet sufficiently private. Torrent users will often receive cease and desists from their internet providers. Bitcoin users have been routinely identified for innocuous and criminal purposes. Users aren't sufficiently protected for two reasons. One, privacy technology is not yet built into networks like Bitcoin, and two, users are largely uneducated on privacy preservation and unknowingly identify themselves with things like their IP address. Is decentralization good enough? If Bitcoin cannot comply with an authoritarian request to seize funds, which it cannot, doesn't that satisfy the needs of crypto anarchists? It's certainly good and covers the majority of authoritarian requests, but does not protect users from, for example, physical violence. While a user can't have their funds seized at the protocol level, if their identity is exposed, a powerful entity could find them physically and coerce them. Luckily, lots of exciting work is happening around privacy. There are privacy-forward cryptocurrencies like Zcash and Monero, projects like Enigma and Keep, and the big protocols like Bitcoin and Ethereum have plans to improve their privacy technology. Use cases. Here are some example implementations of the most commonly discussed use cases for crypto. Money. Incremental. A cryptocurrency that can, without the consent of the majority of the network, report the identities and behaviors of participants in the network to governments, freeze or seize balances, or change the rules, for example, monetary policy. Anarchic. A cryptocurrency that is unable to comply with authoritarian requests, for example, Bitcoin, and offers strong privacy guarantees, for example, Zcash. Computing platform. Incremental. A smart contract protocol that can, without the consent of the majority of the network, blacklist accounts, for example, EOS, or prevent access to certain groups, for example, private blockchains. Anarchic. A smart contract protocol that is unable to comply with authoritarian requests, for example, Ethereum, and offers strong privacy guarantees, none yet exist, of material scale. Tokenized securities. Incremental. A protocol or set of smart contracts designed to comply with existing financial and legal systems, necessarily enabling those in power to control access and modify data of the protocol. Anarchic. A completely new system for securities where the source of truth is not existing systems, but what is on the chain. This new system is unable to comply with authoritarian requests and sufficiently protects user privacy. Non-fungible tokens. Incremental. Just like tokenized securities, where the token is only a pointer to the provenance, or true version, of the asset, when the token and the asset are out of sync, a centralized entity is able to modify the ledger to match the token with the asset. Anarchic. The provenance of the asset is the token. The ledger is unable to comply with authoritarian requests, and the privacy of users is preserved. In each of these cases, there are possible benefits in adopting the incremental approach compared with current technologies. For example, an incremental approach to tokenized securities scales the technology behind securities while maintaining compatibility with today's systems. However, the incremental approach will never satisfy the requirements of crypto anarchists because the incremental approach can always comply with authoritarian requests and does not necessarily, but could, offer privacy. Conclusion. In sum, one can think of crypto projects as either crypto incremental or crypto anarchic. Both remove the middleman omnipresent in today's Web2 systems, but differ in their abilities to comply with authoritarian requests and preserve privacy. Crypto incrementalists envision numerous applications of blockchain that can improve efficiencies in existing systems, designing around current legal and financial systems. The protocols of crypto incrementalists remove the middleman, but are not resistant to censorship. While their protocols may behave like decentralized networks, they are still able to comply with authoritarian requests. The crypto incremental future does not look that different from today. Users may enjoy incrementally reduced fees, but no new freedoms. The protocols of crypto anarchists cannot comply with authoritarian requests, and they preserve the privacy and anonymity of its users. These requirements are hard to satisfy, as evidenced by Bitcoin's poor privacy guarantees, and make certain use cases all but impossible. For example, enterprise blockchains, tokenized securities, with legacy financial and legal systems. Many of the most common debates in crypto reach an impasse because one party is a crypto incrementalist and the other is a crypto anarchist. Critics of EOS, IOTA, anything that's not Bitcoin, complain that it's too centralized. If you are a crypto anarchist, EOS would never satisfy your requirements. But if you're a crypto incrementalist, you may happily accept centralization for the faster transactions. I believe crypto incremental and crypto anarchic projects can coexist. Where we see problems is in the widespread conflation of crypto anarchic properties with crypto incremental projects. Early crypto evangelists have been so successful in promoting censorship resistance and privacy that many assume that all crypto projects have or will have these properties. This is a dangerous misconception, as it's highly unlikely, mostly impossible, that a project can go from crypto incremental to crypto anarchic. Crypto incremental projects are simply not contenders for use cases that require crypto anarchy, but many market themselves as contenders because the quote value of those use cases, for example, unseizable money and permissionless platforms, is much higher than an incremental improvement to an existing system. We would do well as an industry to clarify. All right, and that was by Tony Shang, and again, it was titled Crypto Incrementalism versus Crypto Anarchy. Now, I solidly fall down into the idea of crypto anarchy, and I think it's merely because our economic protocol must be independent of our political whim and like our social and cultural differences, because otherwise we cannot build a society with a diverse culture and diverse political opinions. It is it is the protocols that we agree to interact with that actually allow us to scale socially past our normal cultural and trust barriers. So if our money, if the actual economic indicators, prices, and balancing elements of an economy are not independent to our cultural and subjective opinions of things, then we've introduced a huge vulnerability in our economic system. We no longer can maintain peace because our economic well-being and efficiency is subject to subjective beliefs. It becomes a consequence of our culture and inevitably our race or sex or any other idiotic categorical divide that we want to hate other people on. It introduces a vulnerability for people to use that hate to economically destroy each other outside of our economic productivity and cooperative endeavors. So where a independent protocol forces us to get along and, you know, forces a racist guy in Arkansas who's grown up in one very strict culture and never seen anything else about the world may actually be voluntarily trading with a woman in China who has made his TV or, you know, whatever the hell it is, he's trading with them it completely in spite. They might be absolutely polar opposites in what they believe and how they think, and they may actually, if meeting in real life, they may absolutely hate each other. But because of an independent economic tool, like an independent money, they are able to transact with each other and live peacefully together without even knowing each other or seeing each other. The Chinese woman can actually benefit the person, the racist idiot in Arkansas, and no offense to Arkansas, I just kind of pulled that out of my ass. And similarly, the racist guy in Arkansas can sustain the life and a productive capacity of the woman in China. So that is what peace is. It's not everybody holding hands and singing Kumbaya and believing the exact same thing at all times during the day. It's despite the fact that we will all disagree. I mean, I don't even agree with my close friends. People that I love and in my family, we have a diverse set of beliefs, and we bicker and talk about our beliefs all the time, and we disagree on them. If you can't do that with a family, who the hell thinks we're going to do that at the scale of a nation or the entire world? Like, that's ridiculous. It's never going to happen. If you want peace, you have to make the protocols for interacting and trading with each other independent of any of those philosophies, opinions, or subjective valuations. If the money is not independent, if it's run by a political system that is subject to our racist and ignorant opinions of each other, or our ideas that this belief is wrong and this belief is right, and rather than having a protocol for how to interact, we have a protocol for whose culture is right and whose is going to get squished. That is an economic vulnerability that will lead to war, poverty, and hatred. And it's divisive. It breaks societies apart. It does not bring them together. All right. Well, I don't want to ramble anymore. But there's actually one specifically on this topic about social scalability and why it is that politically independent protocols that are apolitical, are, and like money as a tool, that is what actually allowed us to scale society past those cultural natural limitations of the human condition. Like Dunbar's number is that you can only understand and trust people, trust like 150 people, like based on like reputation and how trustworthy they are. And outside of that, that's why tribes were limited to that number of people, is because we can't scale past that in our individual minds. So we had to have an independent tool that allowed us to trust and exchange with other people who we could not understand or inevitably did have huge cultural differences with. And that tool was money, and it is exactly what led to the growth of society and civilization past the level of tribes and families. I encourage you to listen to him. That one's a Nick Szabo's essay called Money, Blockchains, and Social Scalability. It's episode 66, and it is an absolute excellent read. It's a little bit longer than most of the ones we do, but it's absolutely wonderful, and it's so dense. It's got some really good shit in it. So I encourage you to check that one out if you want to dig into this a little bit further and understand why crypto anarchy, why the protocol being crypto anarchic is actually critical to it being an improvement over what we use today, because we're not translating the independence of money into the digital world if it does not have the privacy and censorship-resistant properties of what's trying to be built with Bitcoin. So again, we'll go ahead and close this here. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy. Check out Tony Shang's website. That's S-H-E-N-G. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Apologize if I'm not. But it's TonySheng.com. It's just his name. And he's got a couple other good articles that I've kind of skimmed, and I might actually be reading them later. But looks like some really good stuff. So be sure to check him out. I'll tag him in the post as well as link to his page so that you can dig a little deeper if you would like. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Share it with all of your friends in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space, and all of your other friends, too, who hate hearing about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency because they need it. They need it so bad. And if you share my podcast with them, they will get to hear all the cool stuff going on in the crypto economy space and with Bitcoin development. So, with that, of course, I will have my Bitcoin donation address on the Podbean episode and in the Twitter post. And I actually just got, I just checked a little while ago and noticed I had another like $5 or $6 donation. Thank you guys. Super appreciate it. It helps me out a lot. But I will catch you guys tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.